I'm Richard Verberg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 252 for the week starting 24 February 2019.
Talk Central is brought to you by techcentral.co.za. Or you can WhatsApp the show. The number to use, 071-999-1111.
On Talk Central this week, EOH, or should that be EOH?
Indeed. Also on the show, Mobile World Congress kicks off, Samsung's Galaxy S10 series, reclusive billionaire Jonathan Baer to buy into Cell C, and Vumatel to roll out IP cameras across Johannesburg.
Ooh, exciting. It's Sunday afternoon, it's roughly 1 p.m. and we are live streaming at live.techcentral.co.za. It's time to talk everything tech.
Welcome to the show. How's it, Richard?
How's it, Duncan? Welcome back.
Thank you. Yeah, I went down to a bit of a R&R at the coast this week and ended up with spending far more time with my laptop than I would have liked. But there was so much going on, starting with the story we broke on Monday about EOH. And it just snowballed from there. What a story. What a story.
Yeah, what do you say? I mean, geez, has it been coming? Has it not been coming?
Yeah. Well, we're going to talk about that in a bit of detail this week. And, of course, Mobile World Congress is happening in actually, I can't say when because it's one of our quiz questions. but it is happening, and all the keynotes traditionally happen. A lot of the keynotes happen on a Sunday afternoon, and I know that Nokia has a keynote this afternoon. I think Huawei has a keynote. Sony, all the big guys have keynotes. Samsung, of course, had their big announcement a week ago, and we'll talk about that in the show as well this week. But before we get into all of that, let's do our quiz.
The first question, the CEO of Cell C, Jose de Santos, will step down at the end of February, but will stay on to consult and advise the operator's chairman. Who is the chairman?
And Mobile World Congress takes place this week. In which European city does it take place?
The third question, Telkom's long-serving chairman is stepping down soon. Who is he?
An Israeli spacecraft this week hitched a lift on a SpaceX rocket and is now on its way to the moon. What's the spacecraft called?
I love that, just hitching a lift. Last question. Which JSE-listed company CEO this week said employees found to be involved in corruption will be dealt with and could even be imprisoned, the authorities?
And we'll get to the answers, of course, to the quiz at the end of the show. But let's start with EOH because it was such a massive story. I'm not going to rehash all of it. All this must be about a dozen stories on Tech Central about this now. but let's just go through the timeline because it's a really interesting story. So last week, the Monday before last, Tech Central broke a story that Microsoft had terminated its agreements with the EOH subsidiary EOH Mtombo. The two licenses that they terminated on 30 days' notice. One was a volume licensing agreement, and the other one was a Microsoft Channel Partner Agreement. Now, this is obviously from first basis. This is a problem because if Microsoft won't deal with you, and as a large IT company, it sends a very wrong message to the market. Now, obviously, EOH can get access to Microsoft technologies through other channel partners, but it's not ideal when you're a company the size of EOH and you've got Microsoft saying, "What's going on here?" The share price took quite a knock following the publication of that story, but there was a lot of speculation about, you know, what caused this, and we didn't really know. Then, towards the end of last week and into the weekend, I got told of an anonymous whistleblower's complaint that was written to the board of Microsoft Corporation in Seattle, Redmond, Washington, in which this whistleblower set out some very serious allegations about alleged corruption involving a contract between EOH and EOH Mtombo and the South African Department of Defense. Allegations that the prices were massively inflated and suggestions that a senior official in the Department of Defense, now retired, whose name is known to Tech Central, but we've decided not to publish his name because there's no smoking gun evidence pointing towards him. But the allegations are there that he received kickbacks from EOH to secure this this business, and that the prices were massively inflated, and that the Department of Defense should have worked directly with Microsoft to procure these software licenses, as the whistleblower suggested all other government departments do. So very serious stuff as well. And this whistleblower also lodged filed a complaint with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission under the U.S. Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. I spoke to the SEC, and they declined to comment, which doesn't really help us very much. But I suppose that if they do investigate, which I think they will do, they'll comment more fully once they've had a look at the allegations and decided which course of action to take. But the U.S. Foreign Corrupt Practices Act is a very, very serious piece of legislation. It basically says, and I'm really paraphrasing here, but it basically says that if you are a director or the CEO of an American-listed company, you can be held personally liable for any corruption that you become aware of outside of the United States. So if you're a Microsoft, if you become aware of a corrupt practice in your South African operation, for example, you are compelled to deal with it urgently and seriously. And if you don't, the consequences are very severe. So what Microsoft did was, upon receiving this letter of complaint from the anonymous whistleblower, it appointed a company called Perkins Coie, which is a Seattle-based law firm, to investigate. This was done by the board of Microsoft, specifically the audit committee. Perkins Coie then conducted an investigation, which I believe it concluded around mid-January, roughly, and presented to the Microsoft board in Seattle. And following that investigation and that subsequent report, which I haven't seen, Microsoft Incorporation instructed its Microsoft South African office to terminate its agreements with EOH Mthombo. So clearly they found something that worried them. And they ordered this instruction to EOH that this be terminated. Now, I reported the story, the reasons, the whistleblower report, the potential investigation by the SEC under the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act last Monday. And EOH's share price, which had already fallen quite sharply on the back of the report the previous week, went into free fall. So between the report being published, the original report being published the previous Monday, and its worst point during the course of this past week, EOH's share price lost about 60% of its value, 60% of its value, sure, which was massive, massive destruction in shareholder value. Stephen Fonkola, who, former MTN Group executive who took over as CEO of EOH in September last year, had a week from hell trying to deal with with all of this stuff. I spent quite a bit of time on the phone to him from the beach this week, I think he's handling it in the right way. He's appointed PwC, PricewaterhouseCoopers, to look into all public sector contracts that EOH was engaged with or won over the last 5 years to look for any signs of impropriety. And according to him, they've already found a number of contracts which they've flagged up for further investigation because they look suspicious. Not just the Microsoft one, but other contracts won by EOH. He hasn't stated which contracts they are, but they are now going to be investigated in more detail by PwC. And he's been quite vociferous in stating that we are going to deal with them. I think that was his phrase he used in an interview at the AGM this week. I wasn't there, but Leslie Stones kindly attended that for Tech Central and wrote up the story on that. And he said, we're going to nail them. I saw he subsequently said in an interview with Bruce Whitfield on 702 that if it comes to it, they will be prosecuted and they will be imprisoned. So tough talk, and he needs to see through on it because these allegations of corruption around EOH have been circling for many years, and he needs to be seen to be cleaning out the rot, dealing with the issues, and moving on, because this is the potential here is that if he doesn't deal with it, there's a risk that there's contagion within EOH, and that the business the entire business itself could be in jeopardy. So I think he's dealing with it quite well. He needs to keep pressing hard, uncovering what's going on. I think report back to shareholders, report back to the public about PwC's investigations and what's happening. But so far, I'm quite impressed with the way he's been handling it. Now, there's been a big shakeup as well of the EOH board, probably the most significant shakeup of its board in its history. And I think overdue and welcome as well. The founder of the group, Asher Bobot, who was serving as chairman, will step down and leave the group's employment. He's still a significant shareholder. He owns 7 million shares in EOH. They're not worth as much as they used to be, but he owns a significant chunk of EOH. I don't know if you've met Asher Bobot, Rachat. He's quite a character. The word I used, I think, in my article was forceful. He's very passionate about the business, and I suppose you would be. This is the baby you built from scratch 20 years ago and built it into one of, if not the biggest, IT services company in the country. So he's out, and Rob Sporran, who I think co-founded EOH with him, is also off the board, and they've made a number of other board changes to comply with King 4 corporate governance guidelines. So a big shakeup there, and I think the exit of Bobot is a good thing because it's you've got the founder there serving as chairman while you're the CEO, Stephen van Coller. You're going to have the chairman potentially second guessing you all the time. I'm sure he knows a lot about the business and can probably assist van Coller in a lot of what he needs to do, but at the same time, you don't really want someone who's really passionate and a forceful character as chairman and possibly second guessing what you're doing all the time. I think this will free van Coller to fix a lot of the problems at EOH, and a lot of these problems occurred on the watch of Asher Bobot when he was still CEO. So I think it's a good thing. It's a bit of a spring cleaning. I'm sure Asher Bobot feels quite emotional about stepping down after all this time. But there you have it. I think they're making the right moves, and they need to make these moves because if they don't, there's a very real risk to, as he's pointed out on a number of occasions, to the jobs of 11,500 people who work for the group. This is not a small company, and clearly they've got caught up in a lot of the state capture stuff that's going on, maybe it's easy to criticize them, what was going on in government at the time, but as an external party, I kind of say, well, you guys got yourselves in this mess. It's your fault. Get yourselves out of it. Mm-hmm. You're right. As you said in the intro, Rachat, a good term to describe EOH is certainly EOH. Met Aish.
Yeah, with lots of Aish. I mean, it's just crazy how deep the stuff is going, has gone. I mean, how deep is it still going to go? And this, I'm not just talking about this company specifically.
Yeah, it's incredible.
If I was involved with any of the stuff, I would be shaking in my boots right now because it seems like it's being unraveled now.
Yes.
As soon as one thing, as one person cracks or gives in and turns kind of a whistleblower or something, crumbles quickly. So
yeah,
I just want us to get on with things, though, to be honest. We're wasting a lot of time on corruption. We need to get this out of the way, but imagine how much we can grow as a country within these things, IT services, getting these companies going.
The Zuma years, I think Ramaphosa described them as 9 wasted years, which Zuma then criticized him for, but 9 wasted years. I'd go further than that and say the Zuma years were 9 disastrous years for this country. And I still look forward to him one day being in orange overalls because he should be.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is longer than 9 years. I mean, how long has he's been plotting and planning for, since he probably had the first inclination of power, I guess, inclination of power.
Yeah, the corruption didn't start under Zuma. It started well before then, but I think he honed it and perfected the art of it. I mean, his administration.
Well, he had a plan early on. He knew what he was going for, that's for sure.
And we knew what was coming. I mean, we knew who Zuma was. The Sheikh stuff was prior to his presidency. We knew he had a problem with money. We knew he associated himself with shady characters. And yet the ANC still elected him as a president of the party and then of the country. So collective blame must be taken. But we're still living in dangerous times. I mean, Ramaphosa's position is not all that secure. The Zuma faction of the ANC, if I can call it that, is still very much there and working their damnedest to undermine Ramaphosa and get rid of him. We're certainly not out of the clear, in the clear as a country. Right, on that very, very depressing note, let's talk about something entirely more fun. Mobile World Congress is kicking off in Barcelona this week, and it's the biggest mobile telecommunications trade event in the world. Over 100,000 people attend. I haven't been for a few years. I'm glad I'm not going this year because it would have just been too crazy with everything else that's going on. At home, but we're looking forward to the usual announcements, new smartphones, new 5G technology,
foldable phones. Everybody's going to do foldable probably. Yeah,
for sure. Huawei is rumored, I think, to be announcing one this afternoon, a 5G foldable phone. Not going to be cheap. Samsung's one, as we saw, was very expensive, $2,000. That's going to be work out to the upper 30,000s for a phone, possibly 40,000 rand. Not cheap. The era of foldable phones appears to be upon us. I'm still not sure I'm excited about this though.
I'm more excited about the pull out phone. I mean, remember, I can't remember which sci-fi movie it was when you have this little pen like thing and you just pull out this long screen. I think that's where it's at.
Yeah.
But like I've said before, I see a lot of use for it, but it's still early days. What we're seeing now shouldn't be considered the pinnacle of the technology by any means.
Mm.
We're going to be seeing three or four iterations before I think it's going to be where I personally would want it, where it's something I can put in my pocket, go cycling with, put it out when I need a bigger screen for something. Kind of that best of both worlds scenario. Although I think we're gonna start seeing interesting uses for it, perhaps. More people can just hate it and it'll be a failed technology, like the Zoom was.
The Zoom. So, there's going to be a number of keynotes this afternoon. I'm particularly looking forward to the one from HMD Global. They're rumored to be announcing the new Nokia 9 this afternoon, which will be their highest end flagship to date. Apparently, it's going to have 5 rear cameras.
Oh, my word. isn't that the new status differentiator for these handsets? Yes. Bigger, better cameras.
Yes. 5 cameras. I suspect that might be overkill, but I look forward to seeing what the phone looks like. Nokia hasn't really done, or HMD hasn't really done a phone that takes on the very high end, the Galaxy S, the Mate 20 Pro, the that really premium end of the market. The closest they got was the Nokia 8 Sirocco. But that, even that was mid-high phone, not a top-end phone. So maybe the Nokia 9 is going to be that. Well, I guess we'll find out this afternoon.
Yeah, look, it's going to be high time that they do introduce something like that. Like you said, they haven't really had something that competes. And let's be honest, that's really where the top smartphone manufacturers compete. You have to have that show-off phone and, the top end and the be-all, and it filters down to the desirability of the brand below that.
Yeah.
I would have loved to have that option to upgrade to, but I hope it's not better than the Mate 20, to be honest. I don't want to have phone envy.
Yeah, it's inevitable. The year after, you will you'll see a new phone you want, and the next year, given these upgrade cycles, you are gonna get phone envy. But
I must be honest, though, this Mate 20 is impressing me day by day. I mean,
I love mine.
Yeah, look, it's an upgrade well spent, and I do make some money off the photography, off the camera, so I use it in a lot of the daily stuff that I do, and the quality is good enough to print and good enough for any of the digital work I need. It saves me lugging out my big camera.
Absolutely.
So I would be interested to see what the 5 cameras can do.
Yeah, I'm not sure what they're all going to do, but fantastic stuff. We'll watch that. I think it's around 4 this afternoon. I'll check out the live stream and no doubt have a piece on it up on Tech Central later today or tomorrow morning. Mobile World Congress. I think it's going to be wall-to-wall 5G this year. 5G networks are launching commercially this year, later this year. I don't know if it's happening in South Africa, but certainly we're going to be seeing 5G rollouts in Europe and North America and parts of Asia.
Trump said he wants 6G now. Hey? Did you hear that?
Yes. Yeah, I think 6G is at least a decade away, right?
I think we'll see if we have not already seen limited trials or closed trials in South Africa.
We have, yeah. We have no commercial networks launched yet. The only commercial network that's been launched in Southern Africa, I think, is the one that Vodacom launched in Lesotho. But that's not really a network. I think it's like one or two base stations serving one customer, one business customer.
We're not really looking forward to this tech, though, are we? I mean, we are in a sense that it's going to improve long-term stuff, but for now, it's not really practical because you need to have so many of these base stations around.
Yeah.
It might be beneficial in locations like, let's say, shopping malls or places where people gather, so you can have more people on the network with better bandwidth.
I think it's the long-term applications of 5G that are the most exciting rather than the immediate deployment.
Sure.
So networks of autonomous cars, for example, being controlled by a 5G network, automation, all that sort of thing, the low latency applications. I think the applications are really going to be felt first in business rather than by consumers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and in terms of the cars, I mean, it's a long way off for us still to have that kind of infrastructure. I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
And let's be honest, for everything we need as consumers, what we have now is pretty fine, technology.
Mm. Yeah, I'm in no rush. And Apple's rumored only to be announcing a 5G phone in September 2020. It's rumored they won't do one this year. And I think that's the right approach, actually. Why launch a 5G phone that's just going to drain the battery and it's going to have a very high price tag just to say you've got one? You know, Samsung's announced one now, but it's going to be very expensive, no doubt. It's only coming out later. Of course, the companies are all going to announce them, but I don't think there's going to be huge consumer demand for 5G handsets much before next year.
Yeah. And again, in South Africa, we're seeing a bigger proliferation in the Wi-Fi stuff. You know, fiber to almost all the locations, and now we have good Wi-Fi hotspots in most places you go to. So, again, there's no massive rush for us.
Yeah, exactly. So Samsung's Galaxy S10, let's talk a bit about this because they announced this just last week. You've had a look at it, Rehat. Your thoughts?
Yeah, look, it's a very nice device. I'm not going to lie to you. I mean, obviously, it's kind of that next level of the best phone that Samsung has produced.
Mm.
I've never really been a fan of Samsung devices, to be honest with you. I don't know what it is. Nothing personal against them. I've just never loved using their devices. Maybe it's always felt a bit slippery in the hand. But this one looks and feels great. I mean, that little pinhole camera at the top right-hand corner on the screen. It looks nice. It looks interesting. But, you know, I still don't see what the fuss was with the notch, to be honest with you. So for me, it's just a different look. You know, it's not really... I must be honest, I'm not a fan of the camera array at the back, that kind of long strip.
Yeah.
Again, there's nothing wrong with it technically. It just doesn't look as neat as, for example, the Mate 20 Pro's four camera cluster, which kind of sits in the middle.
Yeah. Or three camera cluster.
Sorry, three camera, but there's four little holes. It looks like a four.
The fourth is an LED.
Yeah, exactly. Look, I'm sure this phone is going to do fantastically well. And, look, it's beautiful, and I don't think anybody's
going
to be complaining about it.
Mm.
They're going to love using it. That screen is absolutely beautiful. Camera, I guess camera is debatable. I'm going to do a camera shoot-off with a friend who's got one, and we're going to, because he keeps bragging to me that his camera is better than mine, so we're going to put that to the test.
Okay.
But look, I think
they look nice. They look nice.
Yeah, they look nice, especially the Plus, the big one. You know, the Plus.
I definitely get the big one.
That's going to be the one to go for.
Yeah, exactly. They're not cheap.
The 1 terabyte version.
They're definitely not cheap though. They're not quite as insane as Apple iPhone prices, but they are very expensive phones. Mm. I think the S10 Plus starts at 21,000, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, yeah. Goes up to 35 odd.
Wow. Yeah, not cheap.
Not cheap. But you don't need the 1 terabyte. I mean, the base 128 is perfect, and you've got normal SD, unlike the Huawei's non-standard format memory card in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. No doubt they'll sell like hotcakes.
Definitely. Contracts, operators rejoice. Their contracts are going to be selling.
Well, not much else to say about it, except they've also announced a Samsung device called a Samsung Galaxy Fold, which is their first commercial foldable phone. The pictures look interesting. I just wonder, with wear and tear over time, whether it's going to break.
Yeah, look, I mean, I didn't see this one in the flesh myself, but the feedback that I've seen from people that have seen it and from some online reviewers, They all say that there is a visible crease, so that you can definitely see it's not a smooth screen when you unfold it. So you're not, for those people that it bothers, it's going to look horrible, I think.
Mm.
But again, you know, something obviously triggered this whole idea of foldable phones, and now everybody's just doing it and kind of seeing it goes. I do see merit in it if the technology matures.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't be buying it right now.
I guess in a year or two we'll know whether the market demand is there. And they're so expensive as well. I mean, $2,000, that's too expensive. This is not a mass market device. You'll find a few early adopters buying it, but it's not going to sell like hotcakes at that sort of price.
Look, and also, I mean, the kind of the other benefit that I see with these defoldable devices is they become more durable, right? So if you have a 10-inch tablet or 12-inch tablet that's flat, that thing is relatively fragile, I guess, if you carry it around, put it in the camera backpack and stuff. If you fold the screen, it's firstly more portable, but if it knocks and drops, you don't have this big screen that's going to shatter. I mean, I guess there's drawbacks and upsides to both of it, arguments.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to take a quick ad break. We'll be back just after this to chat about Cell-C and Vimatel.
Let me level with you. Everyone's got flippin' fast fiber. That's how it should be. You need to live beyond speed, to hack your life, to take your life to the next level. Everything's smart. Everything's instant. Forget TV subscriptions. Educate yourself. Start your own business. Do more. Be more.
Okay, Dad. So, can I get Fortnite?
With connectivity, voice, IoT, business solutions, and so much more. Get smart. Think smart. Level up with Vox. Visit vox.co.za and level up today.
Bitco is revolutionizing the way businesses connect. We're taking on your connectivity challenges and shooting our high-speed fiber internet across the country. Not just for some, but for everyone. Fiber is not a luxury, but a necessity for business, for life, for you. And being connected is everything. So network with a Tier 1 internet provider and take your business to the next level of connectivity. Bitco.co.za. Connectivity is everything.
Well, welcome back to the show. How's it, Richard?
How's it, Duncan?
So, interesting stuff amidst all the other South African tech news going on this week over at Cell-C. Blue Label on Friday announcing that José dos Santos, who's been CEO of Cell-C for many years, is stepping down at the end of this month and will be they haven't announced an interim CEO yet, and they will be doing so soon, and then down the line announcing a permanent CEO. But it did seem a bit sudden, his departure, especially since there's no one lined up to take over from him. And at the same time, Blue Label announced that a company or a consortium called, what was it called? I've forgotten. I don't have it in front of me here.
Berkshire? Close the page. John Bear Consortium. Jonathan Bear.
But the consortium had a name. I think it was Berkshire Consortium or something like that.
The Buffet Consortium?
Buffet. I'm not sure. That's why I was thinking Berkshire because of Warren Buffett.
Oh, Buffett. Then it's definitely Buffett.
So I don't know if it's the Buffett Consortium or it's the Buffet Consortium, but Jonathan Bear, I had to Google this guy because I didn't know who he was. I'd heard the name, but I really didn't know who he was. So it turns out he's a reclusive property billionaire. He apparently lives in Amsterdam, South African. And I think he comes from the family that's launched, I could be wrong here, but I think he comes from the family that owned or owns the Bear's furniture retail stores. I haven't seen one of those around in a while, actually.
Sure, yeah.
But I think he comes from that same family, if I'm not mistaken. Now he's a very wealthy billionaire and investor. He invests not only in the property industry, but Blue Label announcing that they've signed a term sheet with the Buffet or the Buffett Consortium to invest into Cell-C as a minority shareholder. So clearly, Mr. Bear sees value there. Blue Label saying that this investment is going to help further reduce Cell-C's debt and improve its balance sheet, which has obviously been a huge issue for Cell-C for many years now. They have already massively reduced the interest-bearing debt on Cell-C's balance sheet, but it remained very high at around 6 or 7 billion rand. This is a business that obviously requires a huge amount of investment annually in network infrastructure. But he, Bear obviously sees opportunity here. The Blue Label Telecom share price rose quite sharply on the back of it. But Blue Label is going to be publishing its interim results next week. I think it's on Wednesday or Thursday. Where no doubt we're going to hear more details about why Jose Dos Santos is leaving Cell C and why Jonathan Bear, through his consortium, is investing into the company and what all of this means. So it's going to be a fascinating results presentation next week. So look out for all of the details of that on Tech Central. I think it's important that Cell C succeeds. I think they came very close to going to the wall at one point. I think it's good for competition that they're in the market.
Definitely.
The question this raises, though, is whether Telkom is still potentially waiting in the wings to invest into Cell C. You know, there was some renewed talk in recent months that Telkom is interested in buying into Cell C. We don't know who else is involved in this consortium, this Buffett consortium, and potentially Telkom is going to look to buy into that as well. I'm really not sure, but. I hear that Telkom hasn't gone away yet, and that they may still participate in some sort of transaction with other investors, possibly. But who knows? Hopefully, we'll have more detail this coming week. Interesting times. So, Vumatel and their subsidiary VumaCam. Now, this is a very exciting story. Are rolling out. They're basically going to blanket the whole of Johannesburg in IPTV cameras, 4K UHD IPTV cameras. If you live in Johannesburg, you've no doubt seen these poles around town. I'm sure you've seen them as well, Rechard.
Oh, yeah. There's a plenty around. Little mushroom poles.
Yes.
Mushroom poles looking things.
That's a good description, yeah. And then they mount cameras below them and they've then provide what they plan to do is provide high definition feeds to security companies that partner with VumaCam. They're going to vet those companies first, they say, and that will allow the security companies to monitor what's going on in various neighborhoods. They say they're going to potentially be working with the police as well and other law enforcement agencies in rolling this out. But what I found really exciting about this. Is the artificial intelligence and the very clever software they're using in the background to analyze what's being fed into these cameras. So, for example, if they want to quickly find a suspicious vehicle, they can just type in, we're looking for a red car that was going this way up the street at this particular time. And I'm not doing it justice because they can actually get down to a much more granular level than that. And they can quickly find a piece of footage instead of sitting there watching through video for hours and then trying to find out where an incident occurred. They can very quickly find a piece of footage. The software can also alert them automatically to potentially suspicious activity so that someone can get an alert in the security center, for example, and then someone watching the screen can quickly go to that camera and have a look at what's going on because the software has alerted the security company to what it believes could be suspicious behavior, which I think is very interesting. Now, this, of course, raises all sorts of questions. Do we really want a private company rolling out surveillance cameras all over our city?
It does seem to happen quite quickly.
It does raise some privacy concerns. They say they are fully compliant with the POPI Act, the promotion of
Privacy Information.
Personal Information Act. Protection of Personal Information Act. So they say they're complying with that. I trust the Vumatel guys. I think they're an upstanding company, but there are obviously going to be concerns around that, and there certainly have been a lot of people expressing concern about it already. It's a trade-off once again. Do you want this additional level of security in your city? Are you prepared to trade that off with the fact that you are probably going to be on a camera if you're walking down the street? Certainly cities around the world, London, New York, many of the major cities around the world also have wall-to-wall surveillance cameras. And quite frankly, I'm actually a little more positive about a private company doing this than the government doing it.
Oh, definitely. That was one of the things I was going to say as well. I would much rather have them do it than somebody that doesn't have a very good track record. And I think we can, it's 1-0 for Vumatel in that arena.
Yeah.
But also, let's keep in mind, most places you go to already these days have lots of cameras. Shopping malls, you know, if you go in and out of any place, major kind of residential estates and those, all of these already, there's already cameras everywhere.
Yes.
This is actual cameras for a purpose. And I'm very excited about this because we often on our, and I'm sure a lot of suburbs have groups where they're on WhatsApp and they send information through to everybody. Please be on the lookout for this suspicious vehicle. Now all of a sudden, it's putting another layer on this and those cars can be found and tracked where they are. I mean, because that's the problem. There's only two sector patrol vehicles in most of these areas.
Yes.
With one, they can't be everywhere, and it's difficult to chase if the guys zigzag and, you know, and they go different places, especially in the kind of the parks area where I am, where they're rolling out now, because there's so many outs to a specific road or a suburb. So I think it's going to be fantastic. I see in Greenside that one of the poles have already been branded with Tracker, one of the main intersections there. Yeah, so they obviously see the value in. And understandably so, because that's a lot of cars travel through there to either go to Joburg or away from Joburg.
Yeah.
I would just love to see the numbers, and the success rate of this.
Yes. Yeah. The question is, what does it just chase crime to areas that don't have the cameras? What's the impact of this? What's interesting is you mentioned about the multiple, this being so widespread. CCTV efforts so far have been typically limited to at most one suburb. With this system, which is going to be deployed across the city, now the software behind it, if a car gets stolen, for example, they're going to be able to track that as it moves right across the city. Obviously, they won't be able to track it once it moves outside the city where they don't have their infrastructure deployed, but you're going to be able to automatically track a vehicle to see where it goes if it's been stolen, for example.
My bigger concern really is, don't the criminals just remove the number plates and then drive freely?
Yeah, probably.
I guess the software probably still be intelligent enough to pick it up. Yeah. If there's no number plate, this is suspicious, flag it, it's the same car, you know, that kind of thing, perhaps.
Yeah. Probably.
I think it's, for me, it's a pretty simple argument. We have a massive crime issue. Mm-hmm. The police cannot cope. The security companies are barely coping in the areas where it's properly set up and kind of the guys are really working with the neighborhood communities or the communities in the neighborhoods.
Yes.
We do unfortunately need this.
Yeah.
But you make a very good point. If it does push out the crime into other areas, you know, then we need to push resources into those areas. The flip side of the coin, obviously, crime then needs to, you know, prosecution and those things need to be followed through successfully. Otherwise, we're just going to have a repeat.
Yeah.
You know, rinse and repeat of the same stuff happening and just catching them more efficiently.
Yeah. I've got no doubt that we're going to be seeing VumaCam video evidence entered into criminal proceedings in courts on a vast scale in the future.
Oh, yes. And look, I just want to put it out there. Once they open this up for like public viewing, I would subscribe to that service.
They're not going to do that.
No. I'm making a joke here.
Because I'd love to see it as well.
Interesting footage, to see what's happening around.
I'd love to see it, but they won't do that, unfortunately. Because I'm sure that would violate Poppy.
Oh, yeah. Look, there would be – it's not like somebody can log in and, I'm sure just control cameras and view around, just easy like that.
Yeah,
Of course.
Yeah, interesting story, we'll keep an eye on it. And that's our news this week. Let's move on to our regular features. Let's start with our winner and loser of the week. Our loser is EOH, for all the reasons we set out earlier, mainly its plummeting share price on the back of the corruption allegations that emerged against it this week. There was no other candidate that raised its hand as high to be picked as the loser of the week this week as EOH. And our winner this week is Jabu Mabuza, the outgoing chairman of Telkom, who's really done a fantastic job chairing the board of Telkom in the last, I think it's been 7 years or 8 years or so. He really inherited a dysfunctional board a very troubled company, and I think he's led it with a plume. And the board of Telkom today is a very strong board, and I think that's a lot of that is to do with Jabu Mabuza and the way he's led it. He's very stretched. He's also the chairman of Eskom, which I think is keeping him very busy. And he's involved in various other efforts. I think he's involved in Business Leadership South Africa, if I'm not mistaken. He's done a very good job at Telkom, and I think it's a big loss to Telkom, but he's our winner this week for sticking it out and doing a very good job of chairing that board. So what's your pick this week, Richard?
So Duncan, I've got something that you might be interested in. It's a PC gaming chair setup that is something directly out of a science fiction movie.
Yes.
It's called the Acer Thronos, and I had a look at this on Friday, and I'm picking it because it's just it's without a doubt the most impressive gaming machine I've ever seen in my life.
Is it a machine or a chair?
It's both. It's everything in one. I mean, so let me start with the price first, and it'll probably put it into a bit more perspective. You buy this entire kit with a PC, three screens, a chair that can rotate, and I mean, the screen closes down on a cage, like around you. You know, the keyboard slides in, but you can get one of these for about 250,000 rand, not installed, by the way. That should be noted.
Oh my word.
That's a separate process. It does come with a high-end Acer Predator Orion 9000 gaming PC, which has two 1080 graphics cards. But it is absolutely fantastic. Look, I mean, it's kind of a showpiece in a man cave if you're a millionaire.
Yeah,
it's not really for your average Joe, but it is one amazing PC. It's got a GeForce mode or gravity mode where it kind of lifts the chair up at a specific angle, and the screens obviously rotate with you, so you kind of, it feels like you are kind of floating in a nice comfortable position. It's very comfortable to play. I find the screens a bit too wide, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot to focus on, especially if you're playing a game in a first person shooter.
Right.
But wow, 250,000. You can I think there's a slightly more expensive version too if you upgrade the PC, if you so choose.
But as if 250,000 rand wasn't enough.
Yeah. Look, I mean, if you want the best of the best, Duncan, it does come with RGB as well, which I really liked. Which is fantastic.
Funny. So the whole chair glows and glitters while you sit in it.
Exactly.
Oh, that's hilarious. So how does this work? I mean, if you're playing a 3D shooter, does the whole chair shake around as you're playing? Or
no, not quite. There is a subwoofer, like a bass bin under the seat. That didn't unfortunately work when I was playing with it. Apparently, it adds a very nice function to it. So when you shoot somebody, you have a little bit of bass.
Mm-hmm.
But this isn't quite a fully articulating chair that kind of, if you're playing a driving game, that'll push you around. It's a static. You can, like a lazy boy, do some maneuvers with the chair.
Yeah.
But it's very much a static position. When you get yourself comfortable into that G-force mode or G mode, and then you just play.
Mm.
So it really is. It's a showpiece, high-end gaming machine. Apparently, they've had a few orders. It was apparently brought in because a customer wanted to see it and they really wanted to buy it. So, yeah, there's obviously there are budgets for this in South Africa.
Yeah.
I could also see this as a corporate kind of experiential thing, I guess. Corporates buying this to do some cool things with.
Yeah.
But, if you ever do get the chance, Duncan, it's at their offices. Acer's offices, it's well worth checking out.
Where is Acer? Where are they based?
Sunninghill,
okay.
Yeah.
Now, I've been looking for a new office chair over the last few months, and I've been looking at the...
Get one of these. It'll be the best thing ever.
I've been looking at the Herman Miller Aeron, and it's at a stunning chair, and it's fantastic reviews, but that, you know, that comes in at about 10 or 12,000 rand, and I thought that was expensive.
Yeah, look, the more I think about it, the more I realize that I mean, I guess there is a ceiling to this, but an expensive chair is definitely worth it. I mean, we're spending so much time in these things.
Yeah.
It needs to be something good. The gaming chairs that cost about $5,000-$6,000, you can get some really good chairs there.
That's what I was also thinking of having a look at. So that's why I haven't actually gone out and bought the Herman Miller yet. I was wondering whether buying a gaming chair, and I just don't know if a gaming chair is really suitable for office work, or whether it's comfortable for sitting for 10 hours.
Oh, no, very much. Yeah. It is designed for sitting for 10 hours. Mm-hmm. So don't let the gaming nomenclature put you off. I mean, you get ones that don't look like gaming chairs, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
All black or whatever. Some of them, you know, do like racing chairs, do look like racing chairs. But within the game, actually, you must go look at Eftek. They've got a good selection of them on their website. It's just easy to see everything in one go.
Okay.
And they've got some nice office-like chairs, but also quite high-end stuff that, again, is aimed at people gaming for 10 hours in a stretch.
Right. I must look into that. I do have my heart set on this Herman Miller though, but I'm gonna do some further research before making a purchase because it's very, very expensive. But yeah, gaming chairs. I'm not an expert on that subject. Maybe someone listening to the show has bought a gaming chair and highly recommends it, or perhaps even another type of office chair, maybe a Herman Miller or something else. What can you recommend? Please send us a WhatsApp 071-999-1111 and tell us what you've got and why you like it or why you don't like it. I'd be very keen to hear what choice you made and why. And if you're using a gaming chair, tell us about it as well. I'd be very keen to know why you chose that particular gaming chair and why you'd recommend it or not recommend it, on the other hand. My pick this week isn't terribly exciting, Rachat, but I was quite excited when I downloaded the new version of Gmail this week on my Android phone and saw it got a beautiful redesign. And I don't know who advised them on it or did the work, but clearly they have thought in a lot of detail about the aesthetics of what an app should look like and font design and all that sort of thing. And it really is beautiful. I don't know if you've installed it yet.
Is it the normal Gmail app or
Gmail
is it the new Gmail app?
It's Gmail for Android, so it's just the update.
Oh, yeah, no, I've seen it. It looks very slick. I mean, the font is the first thing that stood out to me.
Yeah.
That's when the font and the iconography is beautiful.
Superb, yeah.
It feels like a minimalistic design, but there's a lot of information on your screen, which is great.
It's well said. I think that's exactly what they've done. As I say, not the most exciting pick, and it's still just Gmail, but at least it's Gmail. It looks a lot better to the eye, more pleasing to the eye. So well done, Google, on that redesign. And I think that's our show, unless I'm missing anything. That's it.
Just the quiz results.
Let's do the quiz results, and then it's your song pick this week. First question, the CEO of Celsi, Jose Dos Santos, will step down at the end of February, but will stay on to consult and advise the operator's chairman. Who is the chairman? And the answer is Kuban Pillay.
Second question, Mobile World Congress takes place this week. In which European city does it take place? And the answer is Barcelona, or, if you've been there, Barcelona.
Barcelona!
As everybody will correct you.
Let me not try singing on this podcast. We do not want to lose listeners. Telkom's long-serving chairman is stepping down soon. Who is he? And that, of course, is Jabo Mabuza.
The fourth question. An Israeli spacecraft this week hitched a lift on a SpaceX rocket and now on its way to the moon. What is the spacecraft called? And the answer is Bereshit. It's a Hebrew word for in the beginning.
And landing on the moon only in April sometime. I think it's being propelled by gravity there rather than using big rockets.
That's interesting.
So SpaceX basically got it into orbit, and then it's using gravity or I think probably some thrust. But it's going to have a long journey to the moon first.
Loving all the new space stuff we're getting.
There's so much going on.
It seems like there's a new love for it.
Yeah, exactly. And I saw there was a Japanese spacecraft that landed on an asteroid this week, if I was right. Trying to catch up on my science news during everything else that was happening this week. there was something about a Japanese spacecraft. So there is a lot going on, which is really cool.
Yeah.
And the last question in this week's quiz, which JSE-listed company CEO said employees found to be involved in corruption we dealt with and could even be imprisoned by the authorities, and that is EOH CEO Stephen van Coller. Rechat, your song pick, what have we got?
So, like I said before the show, I thought it was pretty apt. Maybe picked it a bit too late. We should have picked it a few episodes ago. But the song is James, Getting Away With It All. Just directed at all these corruption antics happening. People just need to get put into jail now so we can move on with our lives.
Yeah, hopefully they won't.
It's a good song. It's a really good song.
Yeah, James, I'm trying to, I know this guy. I've heard some of his music. He was big in the 90s, wasn't he, James?
Yeah, he's got a few big hits. Sit Down, Laid.
Laid, that's the one I know. Yeah,
that was quite a nice rocky, nice clubby tune I remember back in the day.
Yeah. Great. Well, this is called, full title is Getting Away With It, in brackets, All Messed Up, by James. From Richard and myself, until next week. Take care. Cheers. Oh, sorry. Richard, you're away next week.
Yeah.
So we'll be back.
We can maybe try and record a little bit earlier if early the week works.
Okay. So we might have a show coming up next weekend. But if not, we'll be back in 2 weeks' time. So enjoy the song. Until next time. Cheers. Bye.
Ciao.
That's okay.